Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community, including News Talk 1230 WFVA advertising partners sponsoring today's program. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio in real time via ZipWhip landline texting at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Real treat today, and if you do have questions and want to text some questions to us, this is the person to ask questions to, Andy Lynn with Roxbury Farm and Garden Center with us this morning. Andy, it is always a treat to have you in because by the time you leave, I feel better about my garden and my lawn, and even though I haven't done anything in the hour I've talked to you, but I feel so much more knowledgeable. Good to have you here.
No, it's an absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me, Ted.
It is always good. Roxbury Farm and Garden Center on Lafayette Boulevard in Fredericksburg has all you need, and I guess this is a busy time. It's a transition time from spring and summer and everything we've had in the summer, now getting ready for fall and winter.
Absolutely. Everybody's outside and doing their thing. We've gone through the hardships of the summer weather, and kids are back in school, and nobody's at the beach, and you're out there working on your yard and catching up and making improvements.
This is an important time. I know in the past we've talked, and I know that you've said to me that a lot of what you do, and we'll talk about this morning, a lot of what you do right now is going to impact your lawn and garden next summer.
Well, sure. Yeah, that particularly when it comes to grass, you know, we tend to drive to work and hear the commercials in spring and March and April saying, get out there and work in the grass. But in Fredericksburg, you really put your effort and your dollars into your turf grass in the fall. In the spring, you go into more of a maintenance mode. You might kill a weed or two or something like that. But essentially, you raise your mower to the highest or next to highest level in the spring and keep your grass cut and just relax a little bit. But in the fall, you know, if you have a good stand of grass, it's not necessary to put more grass seed down. However, if you do have bald spots or a thin population, you should put your seed down September, October. That's the natural time for things to go to seed. Fertilization should be done in Fredericksburg for what we call cool season grasses. Most people have tall fescue and ryegrass. That should all be done in the fall, little or none in the spring. Virginia Tech says feed in September, October, December, and nothing in the spring. Heavy fertilization in the spring promotes diseases, so you can kill your grass with kindness. So you really should work very hard in the fall, lighten up in the spring, take it easy, save your dollars in the spring.
That's interesting. And so as we get into October now, you really need to have either started or get started immediately on some of your seeding kind of things.
Well, it seems like the older I get, the faster time goes.
Because
what's gonna happen is you're gonna blink and we're gonna be carving turkey for Thanksgiving. So, you know, September and October are the two best months. It's really a matter of if the soil temperature is still high enough for grass seed to germinate. Soil temperature's got to be like 60 degrees, and you should be good all the way through October unless we have an extraordinary cold snap. You know, the soil is like the earth is like a giant brick. The soil's still warm. So you have plenty of time as long as you don't forget to take care of things.
And I guess with the possibility of a tropical storm this weekend coming up, maybe not the best time to progress seed down. Wait until a tropical storm moves through so you don't wash it all away. Or if you put straw down, are you okay?
Well, if you've got existing grass and you're seeding in existing grass, the grass will hold the seed in place.
Okay.
You know, so you always run that risk. I know I've run into situations where people say, I planted grass seed and I got nothing, and I start walking downhill until I get to the ditch, and it's the greenest ditch you ever saw because that's where all the seed went. But that's not common. I think I'd go ahead and do my fertilization and my seeding because the rain is going to be great for that if you got it down before that. You know, and this rain that we're getting is helping. So I'm looking forward to the storm because, as I was saying earlier, you know, a lot of our vegetable gardeners, they repetitively planting their seed, and they're like, nothing's coming up, and the ground is so dry. And we were pretty lucky this year with regard to the grass because, you know, things were starting to look a little bleak in August and September, the grass is starting to go dormant, turn brown, and you know, it's you. It's the last thing you need to do is have the drought kill your lawn.
Yeah, yeah. No, so it has been dry the last, 6 weeks or so, it seems.
Yes, it was. June was extraordinary. We had 8 inches of rain. The normal rainfall is about 4 inches per month, and so if it wasn't 95 degrees, we were deluged, and the diseases were dancing in the streets on tomatoes and flowers and grass, because diseases. The two things that make fungal diseases thrive are high levels of moisture and high temperatures. I always tell people to drive this point home. It's kind of like putting wet towels in a laundry basket and sticking them in a corner for 4 or 5 days. It's going to get musty and mildewy. Not that anybody ever did that in college. But,
no, never. What are you talking about? That same sort of thing is happening when in June we were getting so much rain.
Well, yeah, it's you're going to have that to some degree, because you know the funguses don't come with the plant you buy or the seed you get, or you don't bring them in. They're just prevalent in nature. They're opportunistic, and they're waiting for their point of entry. You know, so a good healthy plant is going to have a better resistance from diseases and insects and all that sort of thing. But when you get extremes, like 8 inches of rain in a month is an extreme, then Mother Nature is going to show you some things you may not have seen before.
Then it's been so dry. And in the past, we've talked about how you've always said when we get these dry spells, especially in the fall, a lot of times what will take care of it is something like a tropical storm coming up the coast. And right. As much as we're behind now, could get taken care of in a weekend.
Well, yeah, perhaps. I haven't really looked at the rainfall. I think we were falling back. But, you know, the average rainfall, I forget what it is, like 47 inches a year or something like that. But, yeah, hopefully we'll catch up, I think. Like I said, I noticed my wife said she was amazed at how fast our grass turned green, because it had started going dormant. It wasn't dying. It turned brown. So now it's green back up because we're getting into cooler weather, cooler nights, and mm-hmm. we're getting some moisture. When it's really hot in the middle of the summertime, cool season grasses, going back to the ones that we generally grow around here, go dormant by their very nature. And this is where, like, a late fertilization in the spring is detrimental to them, because you're trying to push them to grow. And I always equate dormant grass to when Muhammad Ali laid back in the corner and did his rope-a-dope.
Yeah.
He was resting. He would, like, 3 or 4 rounds do nothing. He was resting and getting his strength back. So if you go out and push that grass out of dormancy with fertilizer or something, it's like throwing Muhammad Ali back in a ring with Joe Frazier before he's ready. Gonna get killed.
I never thought we would have a Muhammad Ali reference to grass seed this morning, but you have done it, Andy, and congratulations. Andy Lynn here with Roxbury Farm and Garden. When we come back, we're going to talk about the different kinds of grass seeds and that you should plant around here, and we'll talk about the climate that we have and just some things that will help you. Hopefully by the end of today, Andy, when people hear this, that they'll implement some of the things you talk about today, and in the spring things will be coming up, and they'll be happy and have a great lawn for next year. Andy Lynn, Roxbury Farm and Garden on Lafayette Boulevard here. More on Town Talk this morning on News Talk 1230 W.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. Guests appearing on today's show are News Talk 1230 WFVA advertising partners sponsoring this broadcast. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Andy Land from Roxbury Farm and Garden with us this morning. They are on Lafayette Boulevard. For the person who's not aware of all the stuff you've got there at Roxbury, it's a great place just to wander around. But talk about what all you offer there, Andy.
Gosh. Well, we're Roxbury Mills came to Fredericksburg in 1929 as a feed store, so we're still a feed store. We still have chicken feed and horse feed, and we crack our own corn and all that sort of thing. And the things that stores of that nature did traditionally, we sell bulk vegetable seed and fertilizers and chemicals. I say chemicals, yeah, pesticides and things like that. Both organic. We're heavily into organic. We've had that since the late 80s. garden tools. We have wine and beer making supplies, which has been a huge line. We're now getting into beekeeping supplies, like we've had them on the shelf for a week, and I have an appointment to talk to a beekeeper this morning to see where we're going with that. There's a lot of concern with the absence of the honeybee, and so people are really getting into that. Of course, we have an acre of trees, shrubs, and a greenhouse, and you could just go on and on. We have straw and grass seed and so forth, about 10,000 items.
You have,
on 2 acres.
I got some fish from my pond from you out back there, and they are doing very well, thank you.
Well, good to hear that. Yeah, water gardening is a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is. Funny you mentioned bees. I was talking to a bee person at the state fair last week, and she was telling me that getting involved in doing bees is not a lot of work, and she's found it to be a lot of fun and good for the environment.
Yeah, it's a little bit of an enigma to me. We probably should have been doing this 2 or 3 years ago. But for a variety of reasons, we just haven't gotten into the supplies. So it's a brand new thing to me. So it's going to be a learning process. But I think a lot of people get a lot of enjoyment out of bees. We've been selling honey from a fella right outside of Spotsylvania Courthouse for years. A lot of people like to use honey that's been locally grown with wildflower or clover. Apparently, that's very good for you. And, of course, you know, bees are – pollination is, like, super important. You know, we worry about the big things, you know, but it's the little stuff like water. You know, ask them out in California.
Yeah.
Water and bees and loss of crops from lack of pollination. And it's interesting. 60% of the – beehives that are managed by people that are not wild are transient. I followed a truck of beehives up Route 3 one day.
Uh-huh.
So, in other words, you have bees that are maybe being transported on a truck to the almond fields of California, and then when they're done, they take those bees to the sunflower fields of the Dakotas. And so this is very stressful on them. That's hard on them. They have a mite that's giving them a fit. They're just several factors that are causing a decline in a bee population. And I don't know, we seem to be developing more. I don't know if that's got anything to do with it or not. But, you know, if you go out into the country, you may find a few more bees, I suppose.
Yeah, interesting. And it's interesting that with what you do, you pick up something like bees. And so you've got to get up to speed and be able to talk about it to people who come in and ask questions about it.
Yeah.
If it's something you're offering.
Maybe I'll have to go do a hive in my backyard, so I'll know. That's the best way to learn something.
One of the things, and you're great every year to come in and talk in both the spring and the fall about grasses, and you've always been helpful to me as far as the type of grass that you want or that we should have around here, because a lot of times I'll have in my mind, well, I think I should have this grass, and there are certain grasses that we shouldn't have around here. And you've talked in the past about how this area is a little bit different than some areas just because of the climate we have.
Yeah, that's you know, everybody has their passions, Ted. So like we have some people in our nursery that are just primo on annuals and perennials and things like that. You are striking a nerve with me in that I really just love turf grass. It's just fun. I've been studying it for 40 years. But Fredericksburg is what we call a transitional area. In other words, you have essentially two types of grasses. You have cool season grasses that would grow in Fredericksburg and Winchester, Virginia, and Maryland and Chicago. And that's turf-type tall fescues is mainly what we use around here. Then there's perennial ryegrasses and some fine fescues like creeping red fescue. They will grow underneath trees but not out in the sun. But that's the reason that we tend to gravitate towards the cool season grasses is because they're green more months out of the year, typically from, well, if you fertilize them correctly, they're green except for the summertime. So you're getting about 10 months of green out of the cool season grasses. The warm season grasses, if you're from Florida or Georgia, you're used to Bermuda grass. It's Bermuda grass if you're playing golf or football on it. It's wiregrass if it's in your flower bed. That's the long, stringy stuff.
Yeah.
You could have – that will grow around here. Zoysia grass is also a warm season grass. It will grow around here. warm season grasses that will not survive our winters are centipede grass and St. Augustine grass, very popular in Florida. But the problem is the first frost of end of October, these things will turn as tan as a paper bag from the grocery store, and they'll stay that way through May. And that's typically the downside. Now, the difference is the cool season grasses like the fescues and the ryegrass, one seed makes one plant. So as long as that plant is alive and taking that space up, you're all right. But if something bad happens to that, then you need to apply more seed. If you don't, then something's going to grow there. It's going to be some undesirable weed. Space will always fill in. The warm season grasses spread by the roots. They're rhizomal, so they thicken up. And that's why you use Bermuda grass on like a golf course, because you have that divot where, you know, you miss the ball and you take a big chunk out of the grass. It will fill back in.
Okay.
You know, they would just go nuts trying to do a golf course out of tall fescue. It wouldn't handle the traffic. But we tend to do the cool season grasses rather than the warm season grasses just for the greenery. We do have some customers that throw in the towel and just start cultivating warm season grasses because they're tired of buying grass seed every year, because it's harder to grow grass in Fredericksburg than it is in a lot of areas because we are transitional.
Yeah, and that whole transitional part, once you explained that years ago to me, it made sense, and because I had become frustrated and, you know, why can't I get something to grow? And it was turning out I was planting the wrong things.
Yeah, you can manage grass around here, but you really need to know the life cycle of 12 months. Like if you were in Harrisonburg, Virginia,
yeah,
simple Harrisonburg on the other side of the mountains, you'd be doing this effortlessly. You know, it's like 10 degrees cooler. They have a high pH. There's natural lime in the soil, lime content in the soil, whereas we've got these low pHs, and it's hotter, and our summers are just harder than they are over there.
Interesting that someplace that close that it can be so different.
Yeah, it follows.
Harrisonburg's not that far.
We're in the Piedmont. I guess it's you going over the mountain, I suppose.
So why do we have low pH around here in our soil? Because I've heard that. I mean, you've mentioned it, and I've heard that from others.
Well, I guess there's a, you know, they have limestone caves and karst, they call them, the rocks out in the field,
yeah,
over in the western part of the state and in West Virginia and so forth. They have natural limestone content, and we don't have a lot of limestone in our soil around here, I suppose. The rains are acidic. They lower your pH over time. Something I didn't know until two or three years ago that my good friend, the extension agent in Stafford County, Guy Mussey, told me is that we have pockets of what they call sulfitic soil in Fredericksburg in certain spaces. That's why it's really good to get a soil test so you know what your pH is. Because if your pH is super low, your soil is super acidic, you may have nutrients in the ground, but they're not available to your trees, shrubs, flowers, anything. They're just locked up chemically. But these sulfitic pockets, they're crazy. I remember 20 years ago, this poor landscape contractor, he couldn't get paid until he had complete coverage of vegetation on his new house, which that's a fair deal. But there was one spot that he just couldn't get anything to grow, and we tested his pH. It was 3.2. Now, 7 is neutral, and then below 7 is acidic. And we want our pH to be 6.3 to 6.8 around here, mm-hmm, typically, unless it's an acid-loving plant like an azalea. But pH is logarithmic, so 6 is 10 times more acidic than 7. 5 is 10 times more acidic than 6, or 100 times more acidic than 7. So 4 is 1,000 times more acidic than 7. So at 3.2, this was just terrible. You know, he put down 2 or 3 inches of lime to where it was like lunar dust and got some grass growing and got out of there and got paid. But it was a rough situation because grass seed will become sluggish to germinate at a pH of 5, and the soil is essentially sterile at a pH of 4. The only thing that I know of that really likes a pH of 4 is a blueberry. Not even azalea likes a pH of 4.
The soil test, can you get a kit for that, or how can you get a soil test done?
Well, you have the extension agent at the Rouser Building up on Route 1 in Stafford, or also at the Snow Building out at Spotsylvania Courthouse. They have the little boxes, and what you do is you dig on down about 3 or 4 inches into the soil, get a sample from 3 or 4 typical spots, mix them together, put them in a baggie, send them off with like $10 to Virginia Tech. They'll do a good, accurate laboratory analysis and this date they'll send it to you with email, you know, and interpret it. You tell them what you're doing, whether you're trying to grow shrubbery or a garden or grass or whatever the case may be. I think if you really want, you can pay an extra, maybe $4, I'm not sure, and tell them to tell you how much organic matter you have in your soil. That would be things that have decayed, that have previously lived, like leaves that have composted out in your yard or grass clippings that you should let fall. And you run into a situation, if you build a new house and you got a basement, you got soil that was 12 feet down and it's never seen a decaying leaf. Probably have no organic matter. It's going to take some time to correct that. You can try and bring compost in, or you can work the soil and cultivate it. But over time, it gets better. But really, you need to get a soil test to find out what your soil chemistry is, or otherwise it's kind of like driving around at night with your lights off.
Well, and by having that soil test, if I come in to talk to you about what I'm trying to do, you can ask me about that, and that'll help you be able to determine what I should be planting.
Yeah, that's part of the planning process, you know, in terms of being successful and being less frustrated, finding things out like that so that you know what you're dealing with will help you be successful. And we typically keep these little soil test boxes at the store as well. I'm out of them again. We get them like 100 at a time. So I guess as soon as I get here, I'll call my extension agent and say, you got some more boxes. It's amazing how many we give out. We also sell the little soil test kits behind the counter. My faith in those has not been as strong as my faith in a real laboratory analysis. They don't tend to be so accurate.
Yeah. But I mean, in some ways, you're like a doctor. Someone comes in and says, I'm having these kind of problems with my, you know, what I'm trying to plant. And you can look everything over and say, put some lime down and try this kind of grass seed and go from there.
Right. Well, then within the industry, it's amazing. You know, everything changes, I suppose. But we're getting into soils and fertilizers that are organic in content. Well, natural, I should say. For the organic gardener, but they also have all these microorganisms in them and microbes, and there's just a lot of research going on besides the standard old 10-10-10 fertilizer and a bag of lime. You know, you're getting into these things that organisms that help the roots absorb moisture and all that. So it's as sophisticated as you want it to be.
Andy Lynn with Roxbury Farm and Garden Center on Lafayette Boulevard here this morning. More on Town Talk coming up on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It is now 8:31.
I had the radio on. I'm listening to
Talk Done Right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. You can weigh in on today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Guests appearing on today's show are News Talk 1230 WFVA advertising partners sponsoring this broadcast. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Andy Lynn with the Roxbury Farm and Garden on Lafayette Boulevard, our guest this morning. We're talking about plants and getting ready for winter. I just don't. It's more fun, Andy, when you're in the spring, and we're talking about all the spring stuff. But boy, the fall is, as you've described here this morning, the fall is when really the work takes place, and you get everything ready, and then come spring, you can relax and watch everything green up and grow. We got a text this morning, and it may be somebody who knows you. Did Andy learn about how to harness and care for nature? Is it Ronsvert, West Virginia?
Ronsvert, West Virginia. I was born and raised in Ronsvert, West Virginia, and came to Fredericksburg when I was 17 years old, and I've been in Fredericksburg ever since. But I had the pleasure of growing up in a small town named Ronsvert, West Virginia, in Greenbrier County, if you know where White Sulphur Springs or any of that, Lewisburg are very close to that. We had a whopping 1,600 people in that town. You knew everybody. You even knew the name of everybody's dog. I could walk to the West Virginia State Fair. Ronsvert is French for briars are always green, Greenbrier County. And it was a tiny little town in the 60s. And the cool thing about it, when I was 8 years old in Ronsvert, days just lasted forever. Seems like the longer I'm away from Ronsvert, the faster the days go. I can't figure that out, Ted.
Well, Well, maybe one of your childhood friends is listening this morning. They're either listening online or they're around here, because they obviously know a little bit about you. That was a text message that came in, and we found out a little bit more about West Virginia than I knew, and about you. You've been doing this. You told me off air just a few minutes ago. Coming up on about 40 years that you've been involved in this kind of stuff.
Yeah, in the late 70s, I was kind of, I'd work at Roxbury a little bit for a few months, and then I'd go to college for a few months, whatnot. But my first full-time stint, I was thinking about that. I think it was June 1976. So be that the case, this coming summer, I will have been at Roxbury Mills for 40 years. And I'm only 37 years old, so there.
Boy, that's amazing how that works out. No, you're the one. I'm always telling people when someone will say, "I can't get such and such to grow," and yeah, it just becomes natural, second nature to say, "Well, go down and talk to Andy at Roxbury. He'll be able to help you." One of the things we've talked about grasses and seeds and things like that. When we talk now about winter, what about shrubs and pruning things and doing things with winter coming up? What should we be doing
with trees and shrubs? And that's a really fall is really a great time for planting most trees and shrubs. We tend to get fired up and go out and attack things in the spring, but the root development on most plants is very, very active during the dormant period in the winter time. So if you plant a tree in October, then you're probably going to gain a whole season's root development, an extra year, if you will, so that by the time you get to the stress of summer, you'll have a much more developed root system, as opposed to planting it in March or April when the spirit is moving you. The danger of planting everything in the spring, too, is that you go into a garden center and you buy everything that's blooming, and you have one heck of a show for about 10 days, and then poof, you just have to wait till next year to see things. So if you garden backwards, where you're buying what you're going to see in the winter, which is your evergreens, and then you buy your fall plants you're going to see, and then you buy your summer plants, and you finish it off with a punctuation point with your spring plants, you'll probably have more activity, more color year-round. But so back to your question about pruning. Evergreens, you should stop pruning them now, because when you prune an evergreen, you stimulate new growth. And the stimulation of that new growth, you want to knock that off by the middle of September. That new growth may not have time to harden off before you get a blast of Arctic weather that could damage it and thus damage the plant. Mm-hmm. Now, once you get to the throes of winter, like Christmas time, like a boxwood or a holly, it's okay to trim that for greenery to take inside and put on a mantelpiece, because it's so cold you're not going to stimulate new growth. Deciduous plants like fruit trees and oaks and maples and things like that, you want to prune them in January, February when they're completely dormant and all the leaves are off, because the sap is not rising, and so you're not going to have any bleeding. Whereas if you prune them in the main growing season, they may bleed because they've got the sap flowing in the tree. So that's kind of the pruning aspect of it. In terms of planting, great time to plant in the fall. We're going to have to wait for the frost to take the leaves off of deciduous trees like maples and dogwoods and things like that. So about the end of October, if it's a bald and burlap tree, then you can go ahead and plant it. If it's a container tree, you can make it live in the ground just as well as we can in a nursery.
Okay.
Now, there's an interesting thing. Tree Fredericksburg has planted like 4,000 trees in Fredericksburg.
Yeah.
And they've done a lot of research. Ann and Carl Little are kind of the spearheads of this. And what they're actually doing with the trees are they will take a containerized tree and they'll take a strong stream of water and they'll wash all of the dirt completely off the roots. They find the natural growth color, which is about where the roots start to flare out, as I understand it, and plant that at soil level. And they have these roots spread out. And they're putting it in the regular soil that's coming out of the hole, so it's not an artificial situation. It's dealing with the soil that it's going to have to deal with. And they're having great success with this. They're having good growth rates with that. So, I think you have two ways to plant trees. You have this new way, and then you have, the way we've always done it. But they are getting some really nice results and doing a great job with the reforestation of Fredericksburg.
Boy, and that's exactly what it is. And yeah, no, Ann has been in here talking about that. And that's you go around town and you see their trees out there, and they're just terrific for the city.
They've done a lot. They've done their homework. They've done a lot of research.
As far as bulbs, this is the time of year you plant bulbs, isn't it?
Yes, it is. You plant Holland bulbs, the ones that bloom in the spring. You buy them in the fall, like tulips, daffodils, crocus, hyacinths, and as many other minor bulbs that you could get. When I say minor, you know, less known, smaller bulbs. But you plant them in October, November. My Dutchman always said, if I lived in Fredericksburg, I can't do a good Dutch accent. I would plant my bulbs December 5th. As long as the ground's not frozen, you can put them in. And they really are gorgeous. Daffodils are very hardy. They don't crowd themselves out. They tend to naturalize, meaning that they'll be there year after year. The ground rodents, like the voles, don't like them. The deer don't like them. Deer is a whole other subject I'm sure we could spend a lot of time on, because there's plenty of them. So they're very popular. Tulips last 3 or 4 years. They tend to crowd themselves out, or they fall prey to ground mice and things to that nature. But having said that, they did a massive planting of tulips over at Chatham a couple of years ago. In fact, they're doing it every year. Chatham's got some beautiful things going on with their gardens.
They look nice this year.
They got the Friends of Chatham have formed, and the Rappahannock Valley Garden Club has adopted them. And there's just a huge push to revitalize the gardens, and it's definitely worth the trip. You should go over to Chatham. But anyway, back to the tulips. They're worth the risk. It's a stunning flower. It's absolutely worth planting. And I was surprised we still sell as many tulips as we do daffodils. But just like my Holland guy said, don't expect them. Don't treat them like they're going to be there forever. If you get 2 or 3 years out of them, you get 2 or 3 years out of them. That's more like a long-term annual.
Yeah.
But it's a pretty flower.
Well, they are. They are. And so think about getting those bulbs in pretty soon. Are there more? It seems to me, at least in my yard, I'm seeing more voles and moles around. At least my dog's digging for them and seeing them. It just seems that I've seen in recent years more than I can remember. If men remember 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, we have. Man versus nature. When I took literature in Ronsford, West Virginia, in the 8th grade, they talked about man versus literature. But voles, moles, and these are subterranean critters. And then the deer above the ground are just driving people crazy. That's been a huge growing segment of our sales. Is we have lots of different repellents. Some of them are garlic and soap just all kinds of wild things, rotten eggs. They smell pretty wild, but I guess if they're going to keep the deer away, they're going to have to smell bad. We have a much higher population of white-tailed deer in the developments than we did 30 years ago. We have more developments than we did 30 years ago. Deer are hungry, so they're grazing in your front yard. I don't know why that the moles and the voles have exploded in population. You have a few theories. One is we've run them out of their native habitat of the woods. Second is that we really have made great strides in cutting down on our use of pesticides. You know, I talk about using chemicals and pesticides and fertilizers and all that, but you always got to do that responsibly. You need to know your pest. You need to apply the minimum. You may elect not to use any of them, but compare the United States with what we've done with the environment to other countries in the world. We used to dump raw industrial waste into our waterways in the 1960s, and we've stopped that. We've cleaned our air up quite a bit. Unfortunately, other countries don't play by those rules, but that's getting off the subject. But anyway, whether the lack of pesticides has allowed these guys to multiply or not, I don't know. One theory, I think, is that we mulch recreationally. We use a lot of mulch, and that's a perfect environment for a vole. I should distinguish for you between a mole and a vole. A mole is a very vigorous digger that typically goes through your grass because he's an insectivore. He likes grubs, and he likes earthworms. He doesn't eat plant material. That's not his diet. There are only 6 or 8 moles per acre because they're rather territorial, but they can dig up to 18 feet an hour, so you think you have an army of them. They just rip the yard up.
Yeah.
So
18 feet an hour?
Oh, yeah. They're something. They're really something, you know, and they can wreak havoc. So, you know, your options are to try and put castor oil down and drive them back over to your next door neighbor, and then he'll come get some castor oil and drive them back over to you. And or you could try and poison them, but you have to be – which is effective because you're only dealing with a small amount. If you can locate them, one way to locate a mole if you have tunnels is you take a broomstick and you take a white plastic spoon. The white plastic spoon is because you're going to poke a hole in this tunnel and you need to mark it. Because if you don't put that white plastic spoon beside the little hole, you'll never find the hole you poked in the tunnel. But if the mole is active in that tunnel, he's going to reseal that hole in 48 to 72 hours. If he's not in there, then you know, the hole is going to remain open. So if you're going to try and poison him or get him with a shovel or something, first part of that battle is to find him and find out where he is. So that's the mole.
Yeah.
Now, the vole, on the other hand, there are hundreds of those per acre. They're not vigorous diggers. They will capitalize on a mole's tunnel, but they eat vegetation. They eat daylilies. They eat hostas. They eat roses. They eat, you know, they'll cut them off at the roots. If they're in your daylilies, they will know that you paid $15 for this daylily and $8 for that daylily, and therefore they will eat the $15 daylily before they eat the $8 daylily. They are very difficult to control. You can try the castor oil in the bed to run them out. It permeates the soil, and it's unpleasant. One of the best ways, we have an employee at Roxbury that killed 350 voles over a 2-year period with a mouse trap with peanut butter.
Wow.
And he put a striped sunflower seed in the middle of the peanut butter. He said that was the main attraction, and he would put them beside an active run. You can kind of see their runs in the beds. And then he put a plastic pot over that to keep it dark and a rock to keep the pot from falling away. But, you know, that's a very focused individual that can do that.
I was going to say, wow.
But he greatly reduced their population.
So the mounds that I have in my yard when I'm walking and can see and feel, those are moles.
Those are moles.
They have done that. Okay.
Yeah, if they're if they're killing your plants in your flower bed, then they're voles.
Voles, okay. I've always had trouble trying to figure out the two, and you have answered that perfectly. When we come back, we'll talk about some winter things because with a lot of people have water gardens and have fish in their ponds, and we'll talk about taking care of that during the winter. Andy Lynn here with Roxbury Farm and Garden. More on Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. Guests appearing on today's show are News Talk 1230 WFVA advertising partners sponsoring this broadcast. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Andy Lynn here with Roxbury Farm and Garden Center. They're on Lafayette Boulevard, and they can take care of you. Andy, you have so much information. We just go from topic to topic, and you've got it down. Not much time here, but with winter coming up, with water gardens and with fish, how can I keep the fish alive during the winter?
Well, the important thing about fish, first off, let me say, if you have plants in your water garden, there is enough food source for the fish. So you're kind of feeding them for entertainment. And if you overfeed them in the summertime, it's almost like putting Miracle-Gro in your pond. So you'll have an algae explosion because you're putting this excessive amount of feed in there. But as the water temperature drops, once it goes below, I believe, 50 degrees, you want to discontinue feeding them for the wintertime. Because what happens is they may eat that food, but they cannot metabolize it.
Metabolize it.
Thank you. So it festers and it actually will kill them. So you kill them with kindness. So stop your feeding for the winter. The other thing is that you just need an ice-free opening in the surface of your pond because they do emit gases that would be toxic to them. So if you allowed the pond to be completely frozen over for a period of time, then the fish would die from their own toxic gases. The easiest way to do that is to keep a stream of water flowing all the time, and that will usually keep a hole open. It only has to be a small hole so the gases can come out.
Yeah.
In the event that you did get a hard freeze and your pond was frozen over, never strike the ice because the sound waves, the reverberation from that will kill the fish. It'll shock them. So what you would do is take a pan of very hot water and boiling water, if you will, and put it on the top of the surface of the ice until you gradually melt through. But never strike ice in a fish pond.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's a bad form. It's tough.
I have never heard that. That's really interesting information.
Be kind of like you being in a submarine and somebody banging on it with a sledgehammer.
Yeah, yeah. Real quick, as we run out of time here, again, just this is the time of year to be fertilizing and to be planting for next spring. Don't do it in the spring. Do it now.
Good time to fertilize an awful lot of trees, shrubs, and of course your grass, and you can do a lot of fall planting now.
It's been dry. If we get a little bit of rain this weekend, I guess we'll be in good shape. It's been a good year for Roxbury.
It's been a fine year. It's been nice. We're grateful for all the people that continue to support us, and we're just cranking along.
Christmas trees coming in.
Christmas trees be coming the week of November.
Okay,
got plenty of mums now. Pumpkins should be arriving as I speak, and. You know, the seasons go on.
It continues to go on. Andy, always great to have you here. Just thanks for all the information you give all of us, not only just for this show, but just what you do day in, day out at Roxbury. Great stuff.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure. I really appreciate it.
Andy Lynn with Roxbury Farm and Garden Center. They are on Lafayette Boulevard, and they will take care of you for all your needs outside and with everything going on. Andy, again, thanks so much, and see you soon.
All right. Thanks. Take care.
Andy Lynn with Roxbury Farm and Garden. That's it for Town Talk. We'll see you tomorrow on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Guests appearing on today's program are advertising partners who have purchased commercial airtime on WFVA. And have been offered the opportunity to sponsor this broadcast. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.